Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back and thanks for listening. This is a regular program. It's not Pledge Drive anymore. So I just want to say, first of all, thank you to all of you who were so generously involved in our Pledge Drive this past week. It was just remarkable. Remarkable to the tune of almost $3.2 million raised. Our goal was $3 million, and you really came through. Thank you so much. There were nearly 16,000 people donating during Pledge Drive. Now, if you weren't one of them, it's okay. We still love you. But if you want to participate and be counted in this last Pledge Drive, we're holding the door open for a day or two. You can go to relevantradio.com and make your pledge there or use the Relevant Radio app. And that's all I'm going to say about it other than thank you. We're deeply grateful. My number to be on the air, 888-914-9149. So, Cyrus, we didn't get a chance to, because we were talking a little bit about the upheaval going on and the national freakout on the left, all the fascist leftists who are threatening violence against pro-life people because they're not going to get what they want. So we have another clip. This is 90 seconds. A man's got to know his limitations. I understand that by now. Working with you, Cyrus, I understand that now. This is from CNN, and this is a news story related to that because, you know, they're scrambling like rats leaving a sinking ship. They're scrambling, and they're trying to figure out, okay, what do we do now when 25, 26, maybe more states are going to either make abortion illegal entirely or something close to that? What are we going to do next? Well, here's what some of them are doing.
For those intent on ending abortions in parts of the United States, the biggest barrier may now not be politics, but pills, which researchers say are effective, available, and now used for more than half of all abortions.
Abortion activists have been quietly building a whole new business model to target young women on their phones to click, get information, and receive abortion drug by mail.
The Food and Drug Administration approved mail order supplies of the so-called abortion pills with a prescription this past December for women in the first 10 weeks of pregnancy. Advocates insist it is less invasive, more discreet, and just as safe as surgical abortion.
And oftentimes people choose this for various reasons. They want to be able to manage their abortion in their own home, with their family and, you know, around in a surrounding that they're comfortable with.
We have seen an incredible increase of demand, of requests of help. People are really, really scared of what's going to happen.
That's why some abortion rights supporters, such as Women on Waves, based in the Netherlands, say they are already facilitating shipments of the drugs to women in far-flung corners of the U.S., and they're promising to step up the effort no matter where those women are or what state laws say.
What I'm doing is legal under the laws where I work from, and I have a medical oath to do this. I'm a doctor. My oath is that I help people that are in need, and that is what I am doing.
Oh my gosh, do these people not like ever look in the mirror? Do they never listen to themselves? The stupidity, the ridiculousness, and the cognitive dissonance. I mean, yeah.
Exactly what oath did she take?
Yeah, because I thought, you know, even if do no harm is not necessarily, you know, an exact verbatim quote from the Hippocratic Oath, the spirit of the oath certainly militates in that direction. So don't these people listen to the words coming out of their mouths? The one woman is talking about how the pill, abortion by pill, is just as safe as surgical abortion. Safe for whom? I mean, obviously, at least one person dies every time an abortion is successful. So clearly not safe for that person. And that's an unborn human person. Many women are seriously injured as a result of surgical abortions. Now, many proportionate to the total number of abortions, no, it's a very small percentage, but it's still, in terms of numbers, it's not insignificant, the number of women who die in many cases or are left severely harmed as a result of the abortion. And the other thing, you notice that the one person, and I think she was a pro-life woman, she's talking about the business model, because there's dollars to be made in big abortion. And so if they can't make those dollars hand over fist anymore, like they have been, these last 40, 50 years since Roe versus Wade through surgical abortions, they're just going to change the business model. I mean, don't get in between big abortion and its money. And there's a lot of money to be made. So now let's go to one of the crazy states. My home state, by the way. I love California. I just hate seeing what it's become. And it's been propelled further in this direction by the current Governor Newsom. And this is him with some commentary on Twitter about, well, you're going to hear what he has to say. This is his take on this abortion issue and what he's planning for the state of California.
Why is this issue more important than inflation and homelessness and everything else happening here in California?
Because rolling back your fundamental constitutional rights has a profound impact across the spectrum of issues. It's a foundational issue. Everything's built off that fundamental right, freedom. I mean, if guys like me were getting pregnant every day, does anyone think this? This is comical. This is about controlling women. We know that.
What a bozo. Governor, if you disagree with me, call me. 888-914-9149. I'd love to have a conversation with you, sir. So just think of how ridiculous this is. They're defending the wholesale wanton slaughter of unborn people. That's the first thing to keep in mind. They're defending that with a straight face. They think they're doing something great. Rolling back your constitutional right. Nobody has a right. I mean, on paper, sure. You've heard me talk about this endlessly. On paper, you have this quote unquote right to an abortion. If you're a woman, of course, they can't even define what a woman is anymore. You have this quote unquote right, but you don't actually have that right, just like it used to be back in the day, on paper, in the Constitution, for that matter, as well as in Supreme Court decisions where white people had a quote unquote right to own black people as slaves. But they didn't actually have that right. That's the point I'm trying to make here. No one's rolling back any constitutional right here, Governor. It's the right to life, from which all the other rights that you enjoy stem. And if you don't have that right to life, if you're not allowed to even be born, then none of these other rights, whether it's health care or education or employment or whatever it may be, all those other rights, they go away if you're not allowed to even live. So it's ludicrous what he's saying. Sadly, there are many people who agree with him. But this is, he's right, it is a foundational issue, but just not in the way he thinks it is. It's a foundational issue because you're killing people. And yet he's going to go for broke. He's doubling down. He's hell-bent. And I mean that literally. He's hell-bent on enshrining and protecting abortion. And he's pandering to all the people who have been brainwashed into thinking that abortion is some sort of a fundamental right. It is not. You don't have that right. And all you need to do to demonstrate this conclusively is to point out how in our nation's past, two things. Number one, in our nation's past, it used to be enshrined in law in our Constitution, which talked about the importation of people for the purposes of commerce. What does that mean? That's slavery. That was changed, thankfully, but it was enshrined in the Constitution that it protected white slave owners. I'm paraphrasing here. It protected their rights to import people for labor, slavery. And in the various federal and Supreme Court decisions that upheld slavery. And it was all about how these white people, they have a right to own black people as slaves. They did not have that right. They never had that right. Even though, on paper, according to the law of the land, they were said to have that right. Now, here's the second thing, and this is why what's going on in terms of the rising leftist fascism, keep in mind that fascism is neither left nor right. Fascism is, as it's commonly defined, it is the use of intimidation and violence, on the part of a ruling party to bully and intimidate and silence its opponents. That's the essence of fascism. And that's what we're seeing rising like a tide on the left. So here's the second takeaway, if you ask me, when you compare what we're going through right now with what happened 150 years ago, roughly, 160 years ago, with the Civil War. And that is when the people on the other side, in this case, we're talking about the people who were defending slavery. And I have a right to own slaves. And the Supreme Court says I have a right to own slaves. What did they do when you got between them and their money? They began to kill people. They began to kill people. Because if you are willing to own slaves and do all the terrible things that were involved in that peculiar institution, as it was called, what else are you willing to do? What other lengths are you willing to go to? Now, we're beginning to see this starting to play out, and the same question should be asked. If these people, like the insane Governor Newsom of California and all the others who follow in line with him, if they're willing to countenance the wanton killing of innocent human beings, which is what abortion is, let's face it. Let's not candy coat it or sugar coat it. It's not just a clump of cells. We all know that. And all this kabuki theater about all that, everybody knows it's just kabuki theater. If they're willing to do that, do you think it's a really big leap for them to say, well, I'll kill you too? Some people are threatening that. Like whoever it was that firebombed that pro-life organization in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday. If abortion rights aren't safe, then neither are you. What is that? That's a threat. What kind of a threat is it? Well, it's a threat to your bodily welfare, which could include killing somebody. Now, let's hope and pray. And I want to kind of tamp down any hysteria or fear-mongering. This is not fear-mongering, by the way. This is, as Jesus said, you watch and pray. You watch the signs of the times. Be aware of what's going on. Stay up on what's happening. But pray, obviously. So we're praying for peace. But don't be deluded into thinking that the people on the left are just going to say, oh, okay, I guess we lost. Bummer, man. What's on TV tonight? They're not going to do that. And I think there is a kind of diabolical undercurrent to all of this, if you ask me. That there is a kind of frenzied, diabolical implacability where they're just not going to let it go. And they're definitely not going to let it go without a fight. And thankfully, at least for the moment, the fights have been confined to courtrooms with judges and decisions and things like that. But if it doesn't go the way they want it to go, it could easily spin out of control. And then it becomes a real fight. And all you have to do is look at what happened with the Civil War when the people in the South who were all about slavery. And that doesn't mean that there weren't people in the North who loved slavery, too. There were plenty of them as well. There were plenty of pro-slavery people in the North. It just was illegal there. That's all. But when push came to shove and the guacamole hit the fan, they picked up guns and began to kill each other over this issue. Was it a states' rights issue? Yeah, of course it was. But what was the states' rights issue that undergirded that? It was slavery. So we've seen it happen before. We definitely don't want to see it happen again. And I fear that it could happen again if enough of you, and of course I and all of us here, unless we're praying, it could easily go in that direction. I don't want to see it go in that direction. I saw one thing and then I'll go to the phone series. It's something on Twitter that I saw. And let me just pull it up here. My Twitter address is at Patrick Madrid. So these bozos at Ruth sent us, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late justice, who, by the way, somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I retweeted it, that she would be horrified if she knew that people were invoking her memory as a pretext for invading Catholic churches and disrupting the mass, et cetera, because as the person pointed out, she was a very close friend with the late Justice. Wouldn't you know it? My mind just went blank. The late Justice, where is he? Oh, this is terrible. Scalia, there we go. with the late Justice Antonin Scalia. They were close friends, even though they didn't agree on the abortion issue and many other issues. And she actually went to mass with him. So he went to daily mass, and it was known that there were some times when she accompanied him. They were close friends. They respected each other, even though they disagreed. And so the person on Twitter that I'm citing, her name is Margot Cleveland, she said, PSA to the Ruth Senes Brigade, Ruth was dear friends with Justice Scalia. And she would be horrified if she knew that you were invoking her to go disrupt a mass. 888-914-9149. Let's go to some phone calls. Where are we? Let's go to Tom in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Patrick, I got a question about free will. This has me stumped a little bit. Do we have free will in heaven? If, you know, I think about Garden of Eden, and that's essentially heaven, right? And they had free will there. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have free will? And, you know, hopefully you see where I'm running into trouble.
I do. Yeah, no, happy to. So this is an important topic. So yes, we will all have free will in heaven. And the reason for that is because free will is a constituent element, or to say it a different way, it's a necessary component of being human. Here's why. God created you, and everything else for that matter, but he created you out of love and for love. God doesn't need you. He doesn't need me. He doesn't need company. He's not bored. It's not like he was sitting around up in heaven where there was nothing to do. And it's like, oh, I know, I'll create some stuff just to give my, you know, just to have some diversion. No, it's not that at all. The only reason that God created anything is out of love. And so by creating us as human beings a little bit lower than the angels, who are pure spirits, we're not pure spirits, we're body and soul composites. But the reason God created you, Tom, is so that you could experience his love. And he created you as a human being in such a way that you have the capacity to respond in love to his love. So unlike the animals, for whom God is unintelligible, they don't even know he exists. There's no concept in their minds about God. They can't know God. We can. And so this is the answer to your question, is that if you don't have free will, you cannot love. You can be forced into a relationship, but that's not love. You can be coerced in some other way, but that's not love. So the only way in which you can truly love God, assisted by his grace, of course, is to be free. Now, your free will is a necessary component of your humanity. So you never lose that. You never cease to be fully human. In fact, when you're in heaven, you're more human. So let's go back to the Garden of Eden, which you referenced a minute ago. The Garden of Eden wasn't heaven. This is interesting to keep in mind. The Garden of Eden was not, they did not see God face to face. They saw him and they walked with him after a fashion. So God was appearing to them in a certain way, but he was shielding Adam and Eve from his full glory because they hadn't yet passed their test. If they had passed their test, we know they failed, but if they had passed their test, they would have been confirmed in sanctifying grace, and they would then, St. Thomas says, they would then have, in essence, have seen the beatific vision. Then they would see God as he is, and they would remain intact in their free will. But the way to think about that, and I've got to take a break here, so forgive my brevity. The way to think about that is you have free will in heaven, just as they had in the Garden of Eden, but the difference between Adam and Eve and those in heaven is Adam and Eve, they had not yet seen God face to face. So there was, for them at least, that risk that they would fall, and they did fall because they chose the apple over what God had commanded them. And then their fall sort of had this cascading effect for all the rest of us. So our free will is not even as free as theirs was in the garden. They had a more perfect, more pure form of free will because it was unencumbered by unruly passions that we have to contend with, for example, passions for sex and for food and for pleasure and for all the other things that we have to control our passions that try to rule us. They didn't have that. They didn't have concupiscence, as we do, which is that disordered inclination towards sin. So the amazing thing is that their free will and their enlightened intellects were far more capable of withstanding sin. That's what made their sin so grave and so malicious, is that with all of those helps, they still chose against God. But the difference between them and those in heaven is because in heaven, they see God face to face. And there's no way. I mean, they have free will, but there's no way they would ever turn away from God because their decision for God has been confirmed permanently in a way similar to the angels. And I'll leave you with this thought, Tom. You have free will here and now. You're free to do whatever you want to do. I'll bet you that you would not go home and burn your house down. I mean, you're free to do it. You have free will, right? But you would never do it. It would be unthinkable that you would go burn your house down. And to make it worse, imagine if your family was in the house when you decided to light it on fire and to destroy everything and everyone that you love and that you work so hard for. It's unthinkable that you would do that. But it doesn't mean you don't have free will. So just amp that up a million levels, and that's how it is in heaven. It's even more so for them. They absolutely have free will, but it would be unthinkable that they would ever turn away from God. And I'm out of time. Thanks, Tom. I'm coming right back. My number is 888-914-9149. I posted some stuff for you on my Twitter feed. You can see it there at Patrick Madrid. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Hello. Hello again.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Real life solutions you can believe in. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello.
I'm sensing a pattern here, and I like it.
Hello.
I like this. Yeah. It's just what I needed, Cyrus. You didn't get it.
I can't compete with it. All right, let's go.
Ooh, good. Let's shake it up. Hey, I know you wanted me to talk about this story about how James Earl Jones, the guy who voiced the Darth Vader character in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. I begged you. During the break, I was begging you to tell the story.
On bended knee. He only made $7,000 for his part in Star Wars. The first Star Wars, that is. Can you imagine?
Yeah, this guy, even if it's only $7,000, I'm sure that was a lot to him at the time, but he has a whole career out of this. I mean, he was Mufasa in The Lion King. He has the multiple Star Wars movies. They're going to make those until the end of time. He is doing just fine.
Put that down, Cyrus.
Okay.
You're getting a little too close with that thing. I've got a job to do here. I can't be cut in half. Okay, fair enough. He got a career out of it, but looking back, I mean, he says, this is an interesting article in the New York Post. He says, George wanted, pardon the expression, this is James Earl Jones speaking.
Talking about George Lucas.
George Lucas, yeah. He says he wanted, pardon the expression, a dark voice. So he hires a guy born in Mississippi, raised in Michigan, who stutters. And that's the voice. That's me. He says, I lucked out from all these so-called handicaps for a job that paid $7,000. I thought that was good money, he said. And I got to be a voice in a movie. And you're right.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
So the actual Darth Vader actor,
David Prowse,
he didn't say a word. He just marched around and
if you want to hear what he sounds like, you can find the voiceover
right
version of that. And Chewbacca also, the guy who was in the Chewbacca suit spoke English, so Harrison Ford could react properly to the growls. So they added the growls later.
I see.
Yeah. That's movie magic right there.
Funny. Okay. So, by the way, hey, Cyrus, do you remember if about a year ago, if you had dared to say that COVID was basically like the flu, you'd get thrown off Twitter so fast your head would spin? Remember that? Remember those days? Okay. Well, I don't know if it's because you're not like a multi-billionaire and you couldn't get away with it, as most people couldn't get away with it. They'd be deplatformed if they said that. But here's what Bill Gates himself said just not that long ago about this very issue.
Thanks for the
You got to press a
thanks
button
for
here.
The heads up.
This
we're
is the part of the show where you actually
about
press
Star
a button.
Wars than you, okay, here we go.
Press that button.
At that point, we didn't really understand the fatality rate. You know, we didn't understand that it's a fairly low fatality rate and that it's a disease mainly of the elderly, kind of like flu is, although a bit different than that. So that was a pretty scary period.
So after the fact, he's saying what a lot of people were saying, but people would get in big trouble if they said that.
A lot of people got in trouble for that, for saying just that. A lot of people got in trouble for saying, you know what, maybe these vaccines are dangerous. And now the Johnson & Johnson, we know that it creates blood clots and it has killed people. But if you would have said anything about that when we were all being forced to get a vaccination, right? If you would have said anything about, well, I'm not sure, this seems kind of new, I don't know if I'm ready for, hey, if you want to continue your employment, if you want to go to work, you need to get a vaccination. Well, all right, if you want to go to a concert, if you want to get on an airplane, whatever it was. And now the news has come out that blood clots, Johnson & Johnson. Thanks.
Thank you, doctor. So what do you really think about this, Cyrus?
That is...
Share your actual feelings about this. All right, I get it. But if you're Bill Gates, you know...
A doctor, not a mechanic.
You can say what you want. Good old Bones. Okay, so one more audio I want to play, then we'll go to the phones. This is from a mom in Colorado. I don't know her name. She's sharp in terms of her grasp of the problem, and she's actually explaining how her middle school child was invited to join a secret GSA club. You say, GSA club? What is that? Is that some kind of fun club? Well, she's going to explain what that is, a GSA club where the teacher spoke about gender identity and sexuality while urging students to hide information from their parents. And so this is her middle school child who was lured into this, and this Colorado mom is not happy about it.
One day, her trusted art and homeroom teacher invited her to stay after school for art club. So she texted us and we gave our permission. Of course you can stay for art club. When she arrived in the classroom that day, she very quickly learned that it was actually GSA art club, or gender and sexuality awareness. And her trusted teacher had invited in an outside presenter to speak with the children. This presenter started with her number one rule: what you hear in here stays in here. She then brought out flags to describe different umbrella terms or defining words, as she called them, and how people feel under each of the flags. She explained to my daughter that if she is not 100% comfortable in her female body, then she's transgender. She then gave out flags, stickers, bracelets, and what she called the obligatory toys that kids love to collect everywhere I go. She then told the kids that parents aren't safe, and that it's okay to lie to them about where they are in order to attend this meeting and also future programming that she holds throughout the community, both online and in person. Some of the programming is actually includes adults. So she's got 12-year-olds in these meetings secretly with adults. She told the kids that she brought out the genderbread activity. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. But
I have.
The genderbread person activity, which explains that gender and sexuality are on a spectrum and that neither can ever be binary. It explicitly asked the kids who they're sexually attracted to. There was 11, 12, and 13-year-olds in the room when this happened. She doubled down that parents aren't safe, that heterosexuality and monogamy are not normal. And she then proceeded to hand out her personal contact information to the kids, encouraging them to connect with her without their parents' knowledge, by cell phone, by email, and by teen chat platforms like WhatsApp and Discord, where parents can't see the communication. She also sends them invites to her secret meetings through these channels.
You remember this TV show, Cyrus, called To Catch a Predator? Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay, so I'm trying to remember the name of that guy, the guy who did that. What was his name? It'll come to me. But anyway, that TV show caught a lot of guys. It was always guys. It was never, you know, women. And it sent them to jail. So Chris Hansen, that's his name. And he poses as, well, okay, first, let me take a step back. Here's what happens. There are people online who are law enforcement, and they are posing as, let's say, prepubescent or pubescent teenagers online. And you've got these freaky guys out there who want to meet up with them. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And so they arranged to have the meeting at a home. Sometimes these guys would drive from another state to get to this place. And they walk in and, you know, there's a young girl who's actually a young woman, but who looks young enough that maybe she could pass for 15 or 13 or something like that. And she says, oh, hang on, just I've got to go, you know, turn on the air conditioner. I'll be right back. Just wait in here in the kitchen. So the perpetrator, or the guy who wants to be a perpetrator of this crime, he's standing around and Chris Hansen walks in, who looks like, you know, everybody's dad. Hey, how you doing? And he's not expecting to see Chris Hansen walk in. Fine. What are you doing here? And then that's the drama of these things, is because it's all on cameras. You see everything. And these guys are caught and he quizzes them. Well, why are you here? I've got a transcript of your interaction with this kid, and you want to do this and this and this and this. So if you've never seen these, I would say watch them. They're still floating around, probably on YouTube. But I mean, what the mom just described of the teacher doing this to the kids, that would get somebody sent to jail if it weren't for the circumstances, which is that she's a quote unquote a teacher in a school, and this is being done under the auspices of this educational program, etc. Everything else about this would get somebody brought up on charges and very likely sent to prison. Am I right, Cyrus, or am I right? Well, if you were a parent and somebody was doing with this on your upset. To your kid, just not in school, but just online, and you found out about it. Here's my personal contact information. Here's where you can get in touch with me, and I want to talk to you about these issues.
I believe in nonviolence, but I'd probably be in jail.
Yeah, and let's obviously hope and pray that never happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the word grooming's been thrown around a lot. This sure sounds like grooming.
Well, you know, it does. And I looked it up in a legal definition website to find out exactly how it's used. Now, I looked at several different examples of it. Usually, it seems to me that the legal definition of grooming involves all of the things up to and including an intent to have sexual contact with the child. Now, that's the missing piece here.
Well, she's because, handing out her personal...
I mean, we don't even know if it was a her. Yeah. Did she say her? I forgot that. I don't know if it was a him
right.
or a her. Could have been a her. I wasn't listening for that. I didn't want to assume anyone's gender identity. But yeah, that's a good point, Sarah. And so the thing about that to remember is that... And a lot of people on the left, they mock people who use the term grooming because they think, oh, this is just like a QAnon,
right?
Whatever. No, I mean, just from a legal standpoint, if an adult is trying to create this special, hidden, privileged relationship with a minor child, especially in the form of talking about and interacting about sexual issues, and is doing so as the legal definition that I read said with an intention to have some sort of sexual contact with a child. Well, to your point, what about all these stories that are coming out every day about teachers in public schools and elsewhere too, not just public schools, but predominantly in public schools, who are having sexual contact with the students? This has been around forever. I remember when I was in high school, I graduated from high school in 1978. And I remember there was this coach that I always just felt like this guy's kind of weird. I never really liked him. I was never playing any sports that he was coaching for. But I always had this weird vibe about this coach. He was like the super hyper masculine guy. And he reeked of cologne. Always. You know, you ever walk by this guy, you could just, like, you're walking through this. You see, he was almost like a planet with his own atmosphere. And his atmosphere was this cologne. But I forgot about him. It's like, okay, whatever. I graduated from high school, never really thought about him. A few years later, he's in the news because he's going to jail because he was preying upon the girl, you know, girls on the girls' volleyball team or the swim team or one of the girls' teams. And apparently he had a long track record of doing that, and it finally caught up with him, and he wound up going to jail. So there's an example just from my own experience indirectly where that kind of thing was going on. And it seems to me to be going on quite a bit more now than ever before. At least that's what it appears to be. So back to your point, Cyrus, of grooming. This seems to fit that, even that legal definition, because in some cases you might, you'd have to ask yourself, what is their motivation? Why are they so intent upon trying to conceal this relationship with these minor children? Especially when it's dealing with sexual matters, they may say, oh, I'm just here to offer information. Yeah, yeah, but maybe you're not. Maybe there's something more to it than that.
Yeah, and it's so pretty alarming. The first rule of their art club is this all stays in art club.
Don't tell your parents.
Don't tell your parents.
Yeah. Lie to your parents. Mm. Have you posted that audio or actually a video clip?
That's okay, up there right now.
Good, good. Parents, I encourage you to take a look at this. This is a mom, and she's like any other mom. She's concerned about her daughter. She's concerned about her children and the people in the public schools who are covertly trying to subvert the children and maybe in many cases getting away with it. But be aware of it, especially if your child is in public school. We're going to take a break. We'll come back to your phone calls. My number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go!
Cyrus, you know what makes me feel old? I don't think I'm old, but you know what makes me feel old?
I think I can guess only because you were telling me during the break.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really overjoyed. Nancy and I both are. But one of my grandchildren is getting married.
Wow. Is this the first time?
Yeah. This is my oldest grandchild. She's Well, I mean, out of respect for her privacy, I won't give any personal details away. But yeah, our oldest grandchild, a granddaughter. And she's of that age now, and she's met a wonderful young man, and they've known each other for years, and she's getting married next week.
And that's fantastic, Patrick.
It is. It really is. I'm just so grateful. The time has gone by so fast. And now, I mean, you know what this means, of course, is that...
That I get to call you great-grandpa?
Just about. It probably is not too far away that I will be a great grandfather. And that's the part that makes me feel old. I mean, when your child starts, you know, when your children grow up and they start getting married, then you feel a little twinge of that, like, oh, wow, I'm old enough that my kids are getting married. Well, now my kids' kids are getting married. Wow.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
I'll make fun of you behind the scenes.
I know. That's what everyone tells me. Thank you. 888-914-9149. And if you're wondering, my granddaughter's name is Audrey. So
hey,
we're certainly very...
That's my daughter's name. I have an Audrey. Yeah. Yep.
She's not marriage age yet, though, is she?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
You've already told her she's got to wait till she's 40 before she can get married, right?
35.
Okay. Oh, that's good. You're lenient in that regard. Okay, back to it, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Karen now in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you.
I have a question about reincarnation. My sister just visited me recently, and she was talking about reincarnation, and she's kind of on the fence about it. I tried to explain why it's not real or it's not actual, but I really need to know what the church teaches and, you know, what I can say to her to let her know that, no, that's wrong.
Sure. Okay, yeah. Well, if you want, now, is she Catholic?
Yes, she is. We both are.
Okay, yeah. Good. So let's start there. So it says in the Holy Bible in Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed to a man to die once and then the judgment. So that's the first thing, is that divine revelation tells us that there is no reincarnation. So God himself has revealed in the Holy Bible that there is no reincarnation, that you have one life, this is it, and when this life is over, then you're judged and you'll go either to heaven or hell. Now, the second thing to point out is that Jesus himself says this, but he doesn't say it in exactly those terms. So what he says is, if he says, I tell you that if you too do not repent, you will also perish. Now, the perishing he's referred to there is dying, the eternal death. And so he talks about this in against the backdrop of some men who were killed when a tower fell on them. So there, a tower collapsed, and these men were crushed, apparently. And so he's using this as an example to say, you know, do you think that they died as a result of their, you know, something special about them? And he says, no. He says, I tell you, unless you repent, you likewise will all perish. This is in Luke chapter 13, by the way. So here Jesus is telling people who are alive in this life that at the end of this life, they will, if they, you know, if they continue to not repent, that they will perish. What that means is there's no like recycling. You're not going to come back to fulfill your karmic debt because you don't have anything on your karmic record. There is no such thing as a karmic record. There is no such thing as karma, because karma, as it's understood with regard to reincarnation, is this sort of ongoing ledger that you either have to, you know, you improve in one lifetime, therefore you come back as a higher life form, or you come back as a more enlightened person. If you regress in your behavior, then your karmic record racks up more demerits, and then you've got to come back and eventually burn all that off. None of that actually happens. And Jesus, talking about this in Luke chapter 13, among many other places, he points out that after the end of this life, you're going to receive your reward, either good or bad. And the key here is after this life. There is no previous life. There are no future lives. Those are some of the things you could point out. You could also point out that this is completely devoid of any kind of scientific evidence. There is no scientific evidence in any real sense that reincarnation actually exists. There is scientific evidence of people who believe that they have been reincarnated. Science and the Afterlife Experience by Chris Carter is a book that delves into some of those issues. But it's not in support of reincarnation. It's just considering what are some of the scientific phenomena that are associated with people who claim to have been reincarnated. So it's really one of these things where you can begin by saying, number one, the Bible contradicts it, Hebrews 9:27. You could also point out that all of these things that are associated with reincarnation entail this belief that you're kind of like a soul trapped in a body, and you just happen to be in this body this time around, and next time around, who knows what kind of body you'll be in. Maybe you'll be a koala bear next time. Maybe you'll be reincarnated in some other way. So it's a denial of human nature, which is a body and soul composite. You are who you are as a soul and your body together. That's what makes you who you are. Makes you also what you are, but who you are as a person is that body and soul composite. So reincarnation completely strikes against that, and it, in essence, it diminishes our understanding of the human person, because it means like you're like in a soul cage, as Sting might put it. So these are some of the things you can tell her. I would begin with the Bible.
Yes, that's good. Well, one thing I did try to explain is that, that you know, first off, I said, well, do you believe God can do anything? And said, of course, she said, yes. I said, well, why don't you believe that he could make so many souls that, you know, an infinite number of souls, why would he need to, like, recycle them, you know? Yeah. And the other thing is, I think a lot of people that believe in reincarnation, it's almost like wishful thinking, because anybody I've ever talked to about reincarnation, they always say, oh, yes, I think I was a prince, or I think I was a pharaoh, or, you know, nobody was ever a slave or an ant.
Yeah, you were never a dung slinger on the Nile River. You know, you were always some lofty person in your memory. That's true.
Right, right. I think it's kind of wishful thinking on their part. Like, oh, gee, I was somebody in my former life, you know. So
I could have been a contender.
Who you are. In the- yeah, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Can I just say one other thing,
sure.
And then on a different note, because you've been talking about pro-life. What I think a lot of the pro-lifers or people who believe, you know, in life should do is step up to support the women who choose life, to donate their time, their money, their energy into the organizations that do help the women if they've chosen life. And I'm involved in a group here in South Jersey called Jersey Shore Women's Center, and their motto is, we will help mom from womb to tomb. And they, you know, they struggle to, you know, get donations and all that, but they provide, if they need it, rehab, housing, helping them find jobs, and not just the moms, the men too. And they, we have a wonderful group of dedicated women who, you know, who do that, who just take the time. They take calls on the weekend. It is situated near a clinic, an abortion clinic, and there are sidewalk advocates who will bring people in. And we've had, you know, God has brought women to our center because they made the phone call to our center thinking it was the abortion clinic.
Yeah, that's a very common technique, and I'm glad that they do that. Karen, you'll be happy to know that there are countless organizations like that all around the country. And I'm so glad to see them. And we need more of them, that's for sure. But there are countless pro-life people around the country who are supporting women after the babies are born. They're making sure that they have all the needs for newborns, pampers, formula when necessary, clothing, medical care, education for the moms, for the children. There is a great deal that is being done behind the scenes without fanfare to support the moms and their children long after the time that the baby was born. I think, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I thank you for your phone call. There is a common misunderstanding out there. Many people think that if you're so-called pro-life, that all you really care about is the baby before it's born. That is so not true. It is so not borne out by the facts. And I'm so happy to be able to emphasize the fact that pro-life people, they're interested and supportive of life in all of its stages. And so right now, of course, there's the front and center problem of these unborn children being killed through abortion. So that requires a certain special kind of urgency, as the U.S. bishops continuously remind us. But it's no less urgent and necessary to take care of these folks as long as necessary. So to be truly pro-life involves all of those things. And anytime somebody suggests, not that Karen was doing that, she certainly wasn't, but there are people who do, they suggest that, well, you only care about children before they're born. That's not true. It's just simply not true. And it is an established fact that there are so many of these wonderful groups and people out there that are doing just the opposite and caring for them throughout their lives. Thank you for that. Let's go to Ariana now in Norwalk, California. Hi, Ariana.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I had a question. How was God created?
Well, the answer is he was not created. Nobody created God. He has always existed. There was never a time when God didn't exist. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 8.
Okay, great question. So let me explain it to you this way. Have you ever, when you're in the car with your mom and dad, you ever had to come to a stop because a train is going by and, you know, the lights are blinking and the big barrier comes down so that the train can go by and then the cars can go after the train goes by? Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
Okay. So the very, very last car on the train, they're all hooked up to each other. The very last one, do you know what we call the last one at the end of the train typically? You know the word for that?
No.
It's caboose. A caboose. It's a funny sounding word, isn't it? So that's usually the last car on the train. So is the caboose moving on its own, or how is the last car on the train moving? Or why is it moving? Can you guess?
Because it's on?
It's on, that's true, but it's not. It doesn't have an engine or anything, but it's moving. You see it moving when it goes by, but do you know why it's moving? It's because it's hooked up, it's hitched up to the car in front of it, and the car in front of it is pulling it, right? You with me?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that car that's hitched up to, that the caboose is hitched up to, that car is also moving, but it's only moving, and it's only pulling the caboose because it's hitched up to another car in front of it, right? So when you see a long train go by, I don't know if you've ever counted the number of cars on a train. It could be 10, could be 20, could be 50, could be 100. Let's say there were 100 car, the train cars that are all moving, and you see them move because they're going right in front of you. But they're not moving on their own. They're only moving because the one in front of it is pulling it. Okay? What has to be at the very beginning of the train, at the very start of the train, way out in the front, what has to be there for all those cars to be moving? Can you guess?
A hook?
Well, the hook has to be there, that's true, but there has to be a train engine. You know the train engine at the very front where the conductor is? And that train engine is pulling all the other cars on the train. So the train engine is moving on its own. It's not being pulled by anything. It's moving on its own. And if that weren't there, then none of the cars behind it could move. So if you think about it, God is like that train engine. He's always there. He's always been there. And because he is there, all these other things can be in existence. This is a very deep thought, Ariana. I hope that's helpful to you. Thanks for the call. I'm coming back right after this, so please stay right there. No.